AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we're back in the seedy underbelly of the capital's criminal underworld with Chope Dirisu in Gangs of London Season 3 on Sky. And Chope himself is on the show a bit later to talk about that. Plus, we're finding out what it's like when your dad's a serial killer in Happy Face on Paramount Plus. And heading into protective custody with Siobhan Finneran in Protection on ITV. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. Here are my two co-pilots. Egregious Lord of the Rings hater, Boyd Hilton. And dare I say it, recent Wheel of Time convert, Kay Ribeiro, who I should probably say is inaccurate. Currently ripped to the tits on Moe, which she didn't want me to share with you. But, you know, I feel it is my duty to be honest with the listeners. So if you're going to turn up to work... three sheets to the wind, you deserve to be outed for it.
Listen, you're overplaying it. You are. I've had one glass. I confided you in confidence. It's not going to affect my performance. It just makes me a little bit giggly.
We don't know that yet, do we?
I'll find you more funny. That's a positive for you guys.
This could be like one of those special drunk episodes they do of podcasts. Like, didn't you do a
Drunk Women Solving Crime? Yes, that's right. Yes. We did.
I would love that. I don't really drink usually, but I'd make
an
exception.
You say that. I've known you for like 20 how many years?
Yeah.
And you always say, I don't really drink. I've been to so many events, do's, farewell.
Where I have one.
One merely a week ago. You were glugging the alcohol down.
I have one glass, and that's it. I know my limits.
That's not drinking. Not drinking is what a lot of people do. Like Helen doesn't drink, does she? Helen O'Hara.
She doesn't drink at all.
No, just Chris. Chris doesn't drink. I think
Chris doesn't drink at all.
No, yeah, he's got.
I drink very infrequently.
Right.
I'm like James.
Are you? Do you not drink in the same way that Boydy is a vegetarian? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. No, he's a rank hypocrite.
The fact is, I don't call myself a vegetarian. That's something that you are spun over the years. I've never called myself
a vegetarian.
Okay.
Who do you trust? Me.
All right. Well, we've got Boydy here and twatted Kay Ribeiro over there. Let's move on to the podcast, such as it is. Mm-hmm. Shall we begin with what we've been watching? Kay, before you started drinking, what did you watch and what was it like?
Or what have you been watching while drinking?
Yeah, indeed. You know, that's fine too.
No, I never drink and watch.
Never.
I've got to keep my... No.
Well, a nice glass of wine while watching Poirot.
How am I going to... What would I have watching Poirot?
A nice glass of red wine.
Well, actually, that's the point.
Set, you think?
Yeah, maybe.
Was that what?
Is it crazy wine?
A red wine.
No, I wasn't.
I had lovely red wine last night.
Did you?
Ooh. Yeah.
Where was it from?
It was
from
the
his wine
restaurant.
Cellar.
We had dinner before the Arsenal game, and it was a lovely restaurant. I'm going to name it.
Nando's?
No, Trello on Highbury Corner. It's delicious. Delicious.
What
pasta.
Did you eat then? Go on.
I had ravioli with like a walnutty sauce. Mm. It was absolute ricotta filled ravioli, walnutty sauce. It was delicious. Yeah. So, yeah.
And was this red wine that you're.
I can't remember what the red wine was.
Okay. It was that
but
good.
But it was intriguingly, now that we've got into it, it was chilled. Chilled red wine.
Oh. Hang on. Yeah. What?
Yes, that's the thing. Yeah.
Is it a thing?
Yeah. Certain wines are. Red wines. Maybe certain red wines are meant to be served chilled. Yeah,
I feel like our listener Paul the Wine Guy could probably shed some light on this particular issue.
Check. I'm sure Paul the Wine Boy will back me up. Very specific
sangria,
ones, not any. No. This is a red wine. Definitely, the sommelier says it's best drunk below room temperature. Yeah.
Chilled. And you loved it.
And it was really nice, yeah.
Oh, well, James and I look forward to you one day taking us to that restaurant and buying us the
red
wine.
Perhaps we can do that after Kay has fed us the cake that she owes us.
That's something.
Guys, I said I'd do it if we got the number of reviews, and we haven't. So what am I going to do? My hands are tied.
Well, enough whining. Kay, tell us about your TV watching habits.
So, at the weekend, I mainlined Bergerac. It's not a sentence I thought I would say.
No.
I wasn't expecting that.
You seized the nettles.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm using that gag again, sorry.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I seized the Maloney. So Damien Maloney, who I enjoy the work of, he's in Brassic and The Split and loads of things, actually. He pops up in everything. I saw it advertised on Sky. I was like, oh, let me check it out. It's on You and Drama. watch one episode. Before I know it, I'm 6 episodes, I think, or 8 episodes into it. Just finished the whole thing. Wow. And I really enjoyed it. I've got nothing. I didn't watch the original series with Nettles, so I can't compare it. So I don't know how faithful it is. Obviously, this is like him in his younger life. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I think I liked how they dug into Bergerac's pain, the grief of losing his wife, trying to cope with bringing up a young daughter, you know, and navigating the grief together, plus his fractious, shall we say, relationship with his mother-in-law, played by Zoe Wanamaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it. So I hope there's going to be a second series. I haven't seen any confirmation of that.
So just to clarify,
yes.
You won't watch Severance, but you mainlined Bergerac.
No, I will watch Severance. I just forgot about it temporarily.
Well, that's a bit like me saying to you, you will watch some fantasy nonsense, but you won't watch The White Lotus.
Thank you. Clearly what you've done there, Boyd, you've opened up a whole can of worms. Because for those of you who do subscribe to Pilot Plus, you will have enjoyed a 24-minute row between myself and Boydy about the masterpiece that is Prime Video's The Wheel of Time, which, of course, I love for it is great, and Boydy, shall we say, loved less.
Which did you leave in the... Cause
I left all of it in. Oh, cut nothing.
Did you? Well, you left in the Lord of the Rings?
All of it.
Oh, okay.
All of it. I kept it all in.
So self-indulgent.
Yeah. All 24 minutes of us arguing fantasy.
God, was it really that long?
It was wonderful. Do you know what?
It was so long.
It was great.
I thought he was just witnessing not participating.
I was going to say, sorry to Kate. Yeah. I mean, she may have been drunk, but no one deserves that.
I wasn't drunk.
This is why she started drinking.
Yes. And we've driven you to drink.
Yeah.
You should have cut it down.
No, absolutely not. In fact, I listened back to it and enjoyed every minute of it again. So it was,
of course, you did. It was you just on your soapbox talking about Wheel of Time.
Yeah, it was great.
Bloody hell.
I might have just put off everyone from subscribing to Pilot Plus.
But, yeah. No, I don't think so. I saw someone compliment your passion for it.
Yeah, so we spent 24 minutes talking about The Wheel of Time and then about another 20 minutes talking about Jason Isaac's penis. So, subscription, I would
you
say.
You two are crazy. I mean,
that's fine.
It was basically a podcast episode of you two being obsessed by your own little things
Wow, that's indictment. Besmirching Jason Isaacs.
No, I said it was impressive. Anyway, so Bergerac, yes, yeah. I mainlined that, finished that. I was on a real sort of like cozy crime flex. So I watched a bit of Death in Paradise.
Is Bergerac cozy crime?
I wouldn't say it's hardcore crime.
Did we discuss this when we reviewed that?
We didn't review it.
No, we didn't see it. We missed it the week it was out.
I mean, that's telling that you can't remember, but it is good. I would recommend.
I watched the first episode. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was more Scandi influenced in a way than
in terms of the pacing.
Yeah, and the visuals and it's quite grey and
it's beautiful.
I mean, it's Jersey, isn't it?
It's Jersey.
Jersey and Devon.
But it's a very different visual approach to Jersey than the original, but let's put it that way. Other cozy crime, yeah.
Yeah, so Death in Paradise.
Yeah.
And then this isn't cozy, but I then watched a lot of High Potential because I was interviewing Kate.
Oh, yeah, how did that go?
It went well. She's lovely, yeah. So I watched all 8 episodes.
Were you sober when you spoke to her, or was it...?
I really wish I hadn't told you about it. It's like one glass.
Yeah, I mean, that is one misguided to even mention it.
You walked straight into that, didn't you?
Yeah. Anyway, regretting it. So, yes, I enjoyed High Potential. I'd recommend it.
Did you ask her about Hacks as well?
Yeah. Oh. I specifically asked her about... Now, I don't know how far... Have you watched all of season 3?
Yes.
Okay. The comedy roast.
Yes.
I asked her all about that
and
her catchphrase.
Episode. Yeah, yeah.
Tell her... You can say the catchphrase because, you know, I'm on my swearing ban.
No.
Yes. Okay.
You're not on a swearing pan.
Mm.
Okay.
Come on.
Basically, she calls Jean Smart the C-bomb over and over again, repeatedly. And it's very funny. Yeah. So I asked her if she had, you know, at the end of season 3, the rap gifts, if any of it had it emblazoned on it. She said it was she said it was an error. She's going to get a bathrobe with it on there. So I said, yeah.
That seems fair.
Similar to the rap gift in the franchise. Do you remember at the end when he gives out T-shirts with the C word?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was a good episode of Hacks, and I think they've got the 4th series in the can, as they say. So
well, I was going to address that in news, actually. Funny enough. Yeah. So
what have you been watching?
Oh, thanks for asking, Kay. I've been watching Severance. As I mentioned last week that my bitter fury that James has watched the whole thing. He was given all 10 episodes.
Yeah, which crucially, you were not.
Which I was not.
Oh, God.
Adding, by the way, in brackets, in parenthesis, what I also watched was, in the meantime, James showing off. They'd been sent a Severance package by the good people at Apple TV
Plus. I don't know what you're talking about.
He on his Instagram, he had a video of a thing that they sent to him in their special gift.
Yes.
Of like loads of like different...
It was a Lumen vending machine.
It was a Lumen vending machine. Yeah, how about that?
That's cool.
And I have not been sent one. Absolutely furious. So I had to not only have to deal with the fact that James has had access to all 10 episodes.
Oh my gosh.
I've only got up to...
just fallen off the list.
I've just watched episode 9, by the way. That's the main issue. But I didn't get the fucking... And I did get the last freebie they sent years ago, which was I had a clock in it and loads of like a mug, a Lumen mug and all this. But the good news is... I've just had an email from them saying, can we send you this severance package?
Oh, like, so I'll put my little violin away then.
Put your little violin away. Put your big violin away. All is right with the world, although I still haven't got the finale. But I have watched all the episodes. Episode 9 will have gone out by the time this podcast arrives on Monday. Episode 9 is absolutely brilliant and includes, this is not a spoiler, don't worry, I can sense the hackles being raised. There's a moment where Christopher Walken says the word goon that I thought was one of the greatest moments in TV history. Goon. So watch out for that.
You just like it because it's like gooner.
Just goon in this particular case. But I have to say, and I didn't say this last week because I was talking about how I watched up until the penultimate episode. So there's 10, right? And then 7 is brilliant. 7 was brilliant because we're talking about how episode 7s of that and Paradise were fantastic. Episode 8 of Severance, thank you, I have issues with. Yes.
Ooh. Well, we'll get into that in the spoiler special.
But I just wanted to, I'm putting it out there.
He's flagging it.
That I thought that episode essentially could have been dealt with in a couple of scenes in a normal episode. So I'd be interested to know what listeners think. Yeah, I'd be interested to know. And it's the only misstep of this season. I think this season has been phenomenal, extraordinary.
Did you form that opinion when you hadn't received the gift, though?
Maybe.
Was it a bit bitterness coming through?
Might have coincided. I don't know. Yeah, but I don't blame the creators for not sending me the gift. And anyway, it might be a different gift.
Oh, did Dan Erickson not come to your house to bring you the gift?
Not yet.
Which, of course, he did to me. Literally, hand delivered.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Hand delivered.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Ben Stiller was driving as well. I saw him in the car. I waved.
Yeah, sure. No. I don't think it was anything to do with that. It was just a whole episode, you know, about one character. I mean, we discussed it anyway. And it just could have been like a 10 minute segment part of it.
How did you feel about that, James?
Do you know what I mean? What do you think?
I hear what you're saying. I feel this is a discussion that we're going to have to get into with the spoiler special.
Sure, I didn't mean to.
I think we need real intel. No, I liked every episode this season.
When are we doing the spoiler special, by the way?
We will be doing the spoiler special. I mean, really, you're going to have seen them all, Boydie, to do it. No. Since they haven't provided you with the finale.
Right. The finale is next week, so we should do
it. Very soon. I'm having to do some interviews for it as well. So
yeah, that's why they gave you all 10 episodes, because they knew you were going to be doing interviews.
Okay, that's Boyd's rationale. Go with it.
Yes. Did I mention, I think I mentioned last week, The Residence, which we're not reviewing in this episode.
Well, I think we're going to do that on Pilot Plus, aren't we?
We're doing it on Pilot Plus. But I'd watched the first few. When last week.
This is Shonda Rhimes.
This is Shonda Rhimes, Shondaland. It's a whodunit about a death in the White House. And
so far, so Paradise.
Uzo Aduba. Yeah. So it's not the president has been killed. It's that someone is killed in the White House. So that's a big difference.
It doesn't have the, shall we say, set up.
Yeah, exactly.
The Paradise does.
Exactly.
I think everyone's pretty much outed Paradise for being the kind of show that it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't say it.
I'm not saying it.
I've had a steady stream of people this week, while I've been in the office, yesterday and today, coming up to me and saying how much they love Paradise. Five people. And that does not happen with a show like literally five. And what's funny is that the other people on the desk must be sick and tired of it by now, because these individual people are going to say, "Paradise is brilliant, isn't it?" Blah, blah, blah. And I always say the same thing.
You have the same conversation. Seven, with them,
brilliant. And then these people go, "Oh, not a fucking game. We have to listen to him go banging on about Paradise again." So anyway, it's proved to be very popular. I finished The Residence, and I can't wait for us to review it.
I'm desperate to see it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And then the final thing I've been watching, which we will review next week as well. This is another annoying pre. We'll review it properly, and I won't say anything. Although, actually, I was going to say the embargo. There's heavily embargo, but it's not. The embargo's gone because it was on South by Southwest.
That's right. It was.
Which is The Studio,
which I have Actively avoided watching.
Why?
Actively avoided. And people have been going on about this as one of the shows of the year. They've been loving it. And we've had screeners for quite a long time. And yeah. I have been deliberately avoiding it.
That's unlike you to avoid a show of the year.
Yeah. Because you think it's going to annoy you.
The cringe factor, is going to be a problem for me. So I feel like it's going to be an ordeal for me. And it's going to be one of those shows where I know it's brilliant, but I can't watch it.
This is the Seth Rogen show, which he's co-written, co-produced, co-directed, co-everythinged, and stars in Apple TV Plus. And it is very much in a similar vein as the franchise. Mm-hmm. And we'll have an interesting, it'll be interesting to know which one listeners prefer, because people thought we were too kind about the franchise, particularly
yesterday. They did,
But I genuinely did really like it. But this is.
Had the franchise sent you any gifts?
In a very similar world. No, they hadn't sent me a gift. No. I did do a great interview. I interviewed the great Richard E. Grant. I'm not saying it's a great interview, but he was fantastic, obviously. I'll be intrigued. We definitely have to review it.
Oh, yeah, next week, 100%.
So you just have to deal with
it. I will have to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it has got, without spoiling it, and I checked the review, Nick Disseminian reviewed it. So I'm okay to say things like the fact that Martin Scorsese is in the first episode. And just that alone is fantastic.
Yeah. It has been described as Entourage meets Curb Your Enthusiasm.
By
Nick Disseminian. Yes.
And I was slightly smarter to that, because as genius as Curb Your Enthusiasm is, I mean, the other show wasn't that great, was it?
Entourage is a show that has aged exceptionally poorly.
It's so dated.
Doesn't Nick love Entourage?
He very much did at the time.
Right.
But I think nowadays, very few people will admit to loving Entourage.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen every episode of it. So.
Oh, God.
And the film.
Oh, the film was particularly egregious, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes. I think that is what I've been watching. Yeah.
Well, so in avoiding the studio, so I actually went on to TV Plus. I was like, go on, I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to watch the studio. Sat down, watched it, and then watched Your Friends and Neighbours instead, which is the upcoming John Hamm series, is actually coming out in April.
Yes.
And that's on Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
And obviously that's embargoed. I can't talk about that, but I've watched a number of episodes of Your Friends and Neighbours while avoiding the studio. So, you know, make of that what you will. Okay. Obviously, the main thing I've been watching recently was the entirety of the third season of The Wheel of Time, the greatest show of the year. But if you want to hear me bang on about that, you are going to have to subscribe to Pilot Plus, unfortunately.
And when you say bang on.
And there is a lot of banging on. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a lot of banging
that
on.
Was
that
was a total zone out for me.
Yes. Yeah, you did a me. You just didn't listen at all.
Yeah, which is rare for me. I always try and be engaged with what you're saying.
I noticed you had a bottle under the table, didn't you? Take a couple of sips of Moët as I talked.
The funny thing is, you know, that lengthy discussion of that show, I actually think I forgot to mention the one thing that my favourite thing about it. I wrote it down in my notes on my phone. That's where I do take my minimal, let's face it, notes. But there's a bit in it, isn't there, where one character says to another, I don't have to listen to your bullshit anymore. And I thought...
You thought, it made me think of you.
Yeah. I mean, now it's doubly. It works doubly, because like Kay could be saying it about yesterday's, about, you know...
It goes unsaid that that's always going through my head.
No, 100%, except you literally do have to listen to it because you're stuck in the studio.
I know.
But yes, I watched the entirety of The Wheel of Time and had a good time, a very good time with that. In fact, I believe I said on Pilot Plus, it is the best time I've had watching a show this year.
Yeah, that's what got me going.
Crazy.
I know. Boydie was furious at that point.
Yeah.
Furious.
I couldn't let it go. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fine, as
I said. We've literally just reviewed Adolescence.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Right?
Sensational.
But crucially, I didn't say it was the best show of the year. I said it was the most fun I've had watching a show this year.
And you didn't watch
Adolescence. No, but I'm going to watch it this weekend.
You inverted commas didn't have it in time.
Hey, you know full well they didn't give me screeners for that. But yeah, I'm going to watch that on the weekend.
Okay, and then we'll revisit the best show.
I never said it was the best show of the year. I simply said I enjoyed watching The Wheel of Time more than I have enjoyed watching anything else this year, and that is true. I'm supporting laughing. You can't even believe it, but it is true.
He's an insane.
All right, well, speaking of other things I've watched, I finished For All Mankind. I'm up to date. There is no more For All Mankind to watch. I have seen it all. It's too late. I've seen everything.
Right, good. Great.
Yes.
Excellent.
Enjoyed it lots.
I can't even remember now because it was so long ago when it actually went out.
Yeah.
Like, it must be 18 months.
Everything. Mars,
years?
All of it.
Yeah.
Russia.
Mars.
Loads
of
stuff.
Yes.
I think For All Mankind is a show that has definitely improved with every season. I think each one has been significantly better than the last.
Yeah.
And I think this most recent one was the best. Was the best, yeah. Really, really liked it.
Was that with all the Russian stuff going on?
Well, there was all the stuff taking. There was all the Moscow sequences with a certain character in Moscow, which I'm not going to spoil.
Yeah.
And then there was all the stuff going on Mars and it all going down with the asteroid. The Goldilocks asteroid was the centerpiece of that season. But yeah, really, really good stuff. What else have I watched? Oh yes, and I've started a rewatch of Andor.
I mean,
did you say that last week?
No.
Oh, okay.
I started it last night.
Oh, right.
Also, look, you've got a lot on that sofa list.
I know.
Shouldn't it be about trying to clear that list?
Because season 2 is coming soon.
Season 2 is coming, and it's been a while, and I've forgotten so much of it. And I jumped into that first episode. The prologue to that first episode, as a scene setter, is masterful. Masterful. It's when first of all, it begins in a brothel, which is... I mean, that is a lot for Star Wars, obviously, clearly. but for Star Wars, like as a statement of intent, as a mission statement, like this episode, like that prologue, he goes in, it starts in a brothel, and then he just kills two people, including shooting a corporate, but still, cop in the face, an unarmed cop in the face.
Oh, yeah, I remember now, yeah.
Because he's accidentally killed the other cop, so he's like, in for a penny, in for a pound, bam!
Yeah, and it also looks like Blade Runner, I seem to remember.
Yeah, it's got very Blade Runner-y vibes to it. Yeah. But it feels different. Like, if you're going to think of Andor as Star Wars for grown-ups, that prologue 100% sells that concept. Now, I'm the first to admit, when I first watched Andor, I'd seen, I think, the first three episodes, which is the first story arc of the several arcs they have. I thought it was good. I liked it, but I didn't love it. But I do think once you get out of that first three episodes, once you move off planet and you get to the high sequence, that's when it really flies. And it gets better and better and better as it kind of rolls on towards the end. And when Andor Series 2 arrives, we're going to be getting three episodes a week.
Oh.
So each three-episode arc... Mm. is going to drop each week. So it's not going to be as strong. And I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're like, boom, boom, boom. So very, very excited about Andor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Exciting stuff. So yeah, I don't know how much I'll get to rewatch before season 2 drops. Hopefully all of it. But
Kay just put her hand up.
You put your hand up? Yeah. What would you like to say, Kay? Do you need another drink? Boy, are you going to the bar?
No.
Can you pick her up something?
No.
What's your poison?
I was going to say, I need to go for a wee.
I bet you do. Wow. I bet you do.
Darren, cut all of that.
No, it's staying in. All the drunk chat staying in.
Oh, God. Do you know what's so frustrating? I'm not drunk. And
yeah, I mean, and famously, drunk people never say that. So, you know, that's...
Well, listen, if I was, you know, drunk, you'd be killing my buzz right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
By repeatedly saying I'm
harsh.
Drunk. Yeah.
Harsh, but true.
Buzz killer.
Is that everything we've all been watching?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay, right, brilliant, we're done. Okay, should we have a listener question? Kay, do you have one for us?
Yes, I do. It comes from Severe Chicken.
Of course it does.
Mm.
Who says, I was watching Apple Cider Vinegar on Netflix recently and was very impressed with Caitlin Dever's Aussie accent.
Mm. Yeah, it was great.
Ditto Jodie Whittaker's Scottish accent in Toxic Town, although Scottish viewers may be more knowledgeable than me about this. Ignoring the many Brits that do American accents because we'll be here all day, what are the best and worst unexpectedly good/bad accents on TV? And no, this is not a cue for James to murder any accents.
Hey, I'm like Marcus Brody in Indiana Jones 3. I'm like a native. I blend in seamlessly with a flawless local accent. No one knows that I'm not from wherever I claim to be from.
I don't know about that. I actually realised after I wrote my list of answers that
you didn't have an answer?
You have a list?
No.
A list?
Yes. Yeah. I realised he'd told us to ignore the many Brits that do American accents, and I haven't.
Right.
Oh, well, that's fine.
Well, I think you can have it. So I reckon you can get away with, for example, using The Wire as an example.
Idris.
Yeah. Well, so Idris, Aidan Gillen, Dominic West, all of them, like, because it's fucking half the cast is Brits, and you just wouldn't know it, with their Baltimore accents. And I thought, you know, I mean, I just assume they're American. Although some people do question Dominic West's accent in it, though I do not know why. But then also, I'm not from Baltimore, so...
Yeah, I think that's really unfair, yeah. But what we can do... I can do a British doing an American accent on TV right now. And his name is Jason Isaacs.
Oh, my God.
Who's doing, of course, a Deep South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think South Carolina.
I think it might be North Carolina.
North Carolina.
It's a Carolina.
It's a Carolina.
It's one or the other.
It is one or the other. And
Carolina.
Exactly. And I've seen online people having a go at him for it in some of the reviews, saying they thought that, you know, sometimes he just drops it, or, you know, all of that. But then I've also seen actual people from the place where he's doing it from, North or South Carolina, saying how brilliant it was. So I'm sure it's the latter is true. But that is a real challenge them.
Yeah, that's a very specific.
Very specific, deep south, whatever.
Yeah. Well, Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc, I know it's a film, but people, I love that.
I love it as well, but some people would say
I know
it's
they
ridiculous.
Do, but I think it's glorious.
Yeah, but I think Jason Isaacs definitely took the time to really attempt to get it technically.
All roads lead back to Isaacs for you.
I mean, they at do. The moment.
Yeah,
know.
Fair enough. I went for Hugh Laurie. In-house?
I mean, that's fair because so many Americans always thought Hugh Laurie was American from having watched House. Like, they didn't suspect he was English at all.
That's where you've broken the...
I'm going to break it again.
Good God.
Yeah.
Matthew McFadyen in Success.
Succession.
Success.
Prequel to Succession.
The success that was Succession.
I see. Drink a lot of Moe in that as well, I think.
yeah, he was great.
Yeah, fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, James. Oh, I was looking to James and I was like, why is he mute? He hasn't
seen it. Brian Cox is the interesting one from Succession. Because I always think that Brian Cox, it's very Scottish when he gets angry in the show. And I wasn't never quite sure sometimes whether he's supposed to be like Scottish. He was Scottish American. That's his origin. Yeah. Whether his actual accent is supposed to be more Scottish.
I think Logan can be whatever he wants to be. Right?
Well, fuck yeah.
And then talking of Scots, Martin Compton in Line of Duty.
Yeah, his is fantastic as Steve Arnott. Like, I was blown away because he has a really thick Scottish accent and he is so on point with that Steve Arnott London.
Definitely.
Accent.
Similarly, actually, is David Tennant, when he did Doctor Who, his version of the Doctor is a Southern accented. And of course, he's got one of the strongest, most easily identifiable Scottish accents out there. And he did he didn't want it to be Scottish. Whereas Peter Capaldi later on did a full-on Scottish Doctor Who.
Mm.
So four answers from me.
Bloody hell. We're honoured.
Yes, praise me.
I mean, even if are all of them the thing that the writer didn't want us to say?
Well, what are your answers?
I've just given like three.
Yeah, well, piggybacked mine. Go on.
You're missing the one that you are 100% going to drop because you always drop it when we mention accents.
Go on.
It's Daphne.
Terrible. No, it's actually Daphne's brother. It's Daphne's brother that is.
Isn't Daphne's also quite bad?
Yeah,
Daphne's
it's not great.
Too bad. No, Daphne's is fine. Daphne, she's a British actress, Jane Leaves.
Oh, I know, but she's, you know, not from Manchester, is she?
But it's not her that's the issue. It's her brothers. Her whole load of brothers.
Isn't that Anthony LaPaglia?
Anthony LaPaglia is a disgrace. His accent is so bad, it's up there with, what's his name from Ocean's
Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle, Don Cheadle's Cockney accent. Yeah. No, Janie's is fine. Janie's is fine. That's different. Yeah, we met her other brothers. One of them was Robert Coltrane, who's the comedy thing about him was you couldn't understand a word he was saying anyway because he was so Scottish. But yeah, Anthony LaPaglia's accent is one of the worst of all time. Yes, thank you for reminding me.
Adjacent to TV, because obviously Ambika Maud played her on television, but Anne Hathaway's Yorkshire or Leeds specific accent in the film version of One Day,
I mean,
is geographically, shall we say, indistinct. To be charitable,
just wildly miscast. Let's face it,
It's a film.
It is
so
a film.
Discuss.
Although, and if we, I mean, we've opened the door to film, so I'm going to say my because look, Americans.
You two are always
such
breaking,
a fascist about
no, you two are always breaking the rules recently.
They talk about TV endlessly. I wish this was the Empire podcast. It's half,
just
it's
because
probably
they
half
break
about
rules,
TV.
It doesn't mean we have to.
Well, it does.
Well,
I think.
Anyway. So, English people doing American accents, I feel like we have an advantage. I think, generally speaking, a lot of English actors do great American accents. I think part of that is because we spend so much time watching American TV over here. I think it kind of seeps into our brains a little bit. But, you know, I'm very sensitive to Americans doing English accents. But Gwyneth Paltrow and Sliding Doors, I thought, was absolutely cast ironclad. I thought was incredible.
Yeah.
Really kind of, when everyone always talks about Renée Zellweger and Bridget Jones, and I think that one's fine, but I don't think it's as good as everyone says it is.
No, I agree.
Gwyneth, however, I thought hers was on point.
It was. I love the fact you remember that film from how long ago.
Yes.
It's still imprinted in your mind.
100%. Yeah.
Go on, just give us one line in your American accent, your best American accent.
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly. Well, no, so I don't know, you know, if you're going to go American, you have to go full-throated Benoit Blanc. I suspect foul play.
Okay. All I would say is you started the sentence by saying I couldn't possibly and then immediately launched into it.
I couldn't possibly. A passive observer of the truth.
Nicole Kidman's done a lot of British and American accents.
As an Australian.
She's very rarely done an Australian accent.
Yeah, that
she's
is
done
true.
Loads of British of American accents.
I thought Millie Bobby Brown was American. When she
did
Stranger
Things.
Yeah. I didn't realise she was English.
And do you know, I, of course, went on set of Stranger Things for Pilot TV magazine when it was a magazine.
That's true.
R.I.P.
Which, by the way, some people still think exists, because I get emails sometimes from people going, can I just pitch this person for Pilot TV magazine? I'm like, that's very nice of you, but it's been seven years. Anyway, I went on sale, Stranger Things. It was incredible, yeah. And but I'm pretty sure she maintained her American accent throughout the whole day filming rather than, Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, even now, I think she does, because when she came in recently to do the Electric State Press, and her accent was sort of like veering between American and English when she was doing press for that, I think, because she's, you know, in and out of it quite a lot.
Yeah.
What else is there? Cillian Murphy's, his Brummie accent and Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, I think that is great.
Brummie. Yeah. Really big fan of that. Daisy Edgar-Jones does an excellent Irish accent in Normal People. And Irish accents are often heralded as some of
Paul
the worst.
Paul Mescal does as well.
yes, indeed.
Lols.
It made him laugh, kind of.
Bad Irish accent. So there is, if you remember Buffy, like Angel's character in Buffy was supposed to be Irish originally. Now, he did not have an Irish accent. However, when you would see like flashbacks to like 100 years in the past, Angel had the worst Irish accent imaginable. So that's genuinely terrible. Also, and look, I love Bosch. I love Titus Welliver. The man is a legend. However, I put it to you, as Jimmy O'Sullivan in Sons of Anarchy, he is perhaps not the most convincing Irishman I have ever seen.
Oh, God.
Talking of which, have a little run up and try the Irish accent then.
I don't know why you're baiting. Yeah, like, why are you? You're just trying to get me cancelled, aren't you? Yeah. No, I will not do that at this stage, but I will pivot slightly and say Chris O'Dowd's American accent in Girls is often heralded as a, shall we say, a misstep.
Yeah, because he did his own accent in Bridesmaids, didn't he? Mm. And I always wonder why, if you're going to do it in Bridesmaids, just do, why do you have to be American in Girls? Yeah, I remember thinking that. Yeah.
It's acting.
It's called acting, Morty.
Yeah, but it does, it gives you a whole thing to worry about, doesn't it? Like, I think it's a very good decision that he's not doing an American accent.
Well, it's like Jason Statham. You know, like Jason Statham, I think he did an American accent, I want to say one Transporter film, and after that they went, you know what, Jace, just don't. Yeah. Just don't.
Completely.
And then he busted it out again for, I want to say, was it The Beekeeper? I can't remember. It was one of the ones recently. And it's like, why are you doing this again? Stop it. Mm. You're just the Staith. The Staith, I like to think, is very much like Sean Connery. It's just like, just be the Staith. You don't need to play an act. Just be the Staith. I always respected the fact that Sean Connery made no effort, generally speaking, to do an accent ever. He was just Sean Connery.
The Untouchables film is one of the most legendary non-accent things. He's supposed to be Irish, isn't he?
I mean, he's Hunt for Red October. He's Russian.
Yes.
Highlander, he's fucking Egyptian Spanish. And still, Sean Connery. Oh, that was terrible.
It's too late now.
It's out there.
Yeah.
Yes. Accents, bad accents. Don't know what it's like to do bad accents. Sorry, can't help you with that.
Brilliant.
We've answered the question.
We have, that's really true. If you would like your question read out in this accent or indeed another one on the Pilot TV podcast, you send them in to us on the socials, Blue Sky, on Twitter, on Instagram, or to the subreddit, generally at Pilot TV Pod. Good. Okay, brilliant. Let's have a guest. Shall we have a guest? I think we should. And this week's guest is Chope Dorisu, who is back for more Bloody Violent in the third season of Gangs of London, which is back on Sky and Now. And he plays Elliot once again, and this time he's kind of calling the shots in the capital's drug trade. Jordan King sat down with Chope and survived to tell the tale.
It is my absolute pleasure to welcome back to the Pilot TV podcast the star of Sky's Gangs of London, Chope Dorisu. How are you today, sir?
Hey man, I'm really, really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I finished series 3 of Gangs of London last night, so I'm still waiting for my heartbeat to get back to resting. But I'm good. We here at Pilot are all huge, huge fans of the show, and this latest run is properly mad. I know you had your series 3 premiere a couple of nights ago. So how is it for you to finally be getting to share what you guys have been working on with the world?
Yeah, we've been working on it for a while now. It feels like so long ago since I last like pulled on Elliot's boots, as it were. But delighted that it's going out into the world. I mean, the screening event that we had a couple of nights ago was like amazing because of the response that we were getting from everybody that attended. It's just nice to know that your work is still appreciated and people are still interested in going on this ride with us, because it has been a number of years now, and B, a long while since season 2. So it's lovely to know that people are still engaged.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, it's been getting on for 2.5 years now since series 2. So I was just wondering whether for our listeners, you could sort of tee up obviously series two was pretty massive in terms of the direction Elliot's character took, because we, you know, we started in series one as the undercover cop, the sort of rootable hero, as it were, as much as there is one in Gangs of London. Series two, we sort of started to see a slide on the moral spectrum as things got a little bit crazier. And then at the start of series three, you know, where do we find Elliot now, and where's his head at as we start the new series?
It's true. I'm actually a little bit concerned that I'm going to lose some Elliot fans based on what Elliot gets up to this year. You know, at the end of season two, we found him sat at the round table, which was surrounded with the heads of all of the crime families of London. And you wonder, like, okay, cool. So this undercover police officer, who I suppose has relinquished that title now, what does he want from this? What is he trying to gain? He tells Sean that he's going to make him watch, but what exactly is it that he's going to make Sean watch? I think a lot of people thought that maybe he was going to make Sean watch from the inside of a prison cell, him destroy Sean's empire. And then at the beginning of season three, it seems like he's an active participant in it, you know? I think there is the underlying question as to, like, once again, what is he trying to achieve from that? What's his great overall play? But truth be told, I'm not sure that Elliot knows himself at this point. He's lost his moral anchor that was his father. He lost his wife and child at the beginning of the series. And I think he's really just being led by grief, and it's coming out in lots of different ways. So yes, he was our moral anchor of the series. He probably isn't anymore. And it's a kind of a wild journey to find out. As we discover at the same time that he's discovering, who is he now and what does he want?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, as I say, Elliot's had this fascinating journey as, you know, as we both said, he started off as this moral anchor, and as grief upon grief has sort of fallen upon him, he's getting further and further away from maybe the character that we first met. And I was just wondering, something that I'm really fascinated by is that three series in, and even with all the increasing sort of violence and the increasingly hard to justify things that Elliot does, I think we do still, as viewers, he's still our sort of gateway into this world. He's still kind of the, as close as there is one, the human kind of element of this very hyper real, like hyper world of London. And so I was just wondering, for you, now that you've been working on this show for, you know, 5-6 years now, have you developed like a sort of a method to get yourself back into Elliot when you're stepping on set? Is there like a thing that you do with your physicality? Is there, you know, a track that you'll listen to that you go, okay, my head's in the game now? I spoke to Gugu and Batterall recently, and she said that she has a sense, like she has a sense to get into characters.
Oh, wow.
What's your way in when it comes to Elliot? Because he is such a fascinatingly complex individual.
I might have to try and lift that off her, you know, the having a scent for your character. I think, like, obviously she's talking about performing being like a sensual experience and like the memory that's invoked by those senses. I suppose for me, I do try and watch back some of the stuff that we've achieved in the previous seasons. And like, I listen to my voice again and listen to the way that I watch the way that I moved, rather. And there is a playlist that I have of a selection of songs that every time I hear something that reminds me of Elliot or gives me that attitude or sensibility, I add it to the list. So yeah, I suppose music is a gateway for me. And then also the visual cues of what we've shared before works as well.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think I find speech patterns, you know, his speech pattern. Sometimes I'll read a script written by a new writer, perhaps, and be like, okay, cool, I love the sense of where we're going, but the way that this character speaks is slightly different. And then honing into that helps me to rediscover him. I hope it's consistent anyway. I don't want one of the viewers to be like, well,
When was what was the last track that you added for Elliot? I'm imagining the maybe the vibes changed a little bit as you get to series three.
Let me find it for you. I'm just going to quickly scroll through my Spotify. That is not a plug. Apple Music is great as well.
Do you remember what the first track when you were working on series one was, where you were like, okay, I've got Elliot.
Thankfully, it's all in order. So the first track I added to the list was a track called Etho by Retro X. Some of this is like French trap music as well because of the atmosphere that it provided.
Okay.
And the last track that I added was Crocodile Teeth by Skillibang. So, okay. It's a mob ties by Drake is there. I know Travis Scott, Real Friends by Kanye West. Like, it's a very eclectic. He's a very complicated guy, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a complicated show, and I think something that I find personally as a viewer is what keeps you hooked, but also just makes it such a unique series in what is an otherwise quite crowded genre space is that consistently series one, series two, series three, we've got these distinct authorial voices guiding the show. So, you know, Gareth Evans set the bar really high series one of like, this is dramatic action with no compromise. Corin Hardy comes in series two and it's like, it bleeds more of his kind of horror influences in. There's some really genuinely scary moments in series two. And then now series three, obviously you've got Hong Sung Kim. He's this incredible South Korean filmmaker. I just watched Project Wolf Hunting for the first time a couple of weeks ago. And what do you think it is that he brings in terms of his lens onto this world that you've been a part of now for the best part of half a decade?
I think there's a wonderful slickness to his eye. Just the way the camera moves, the way we move through the city, the way we're introduced to characters. I love that sensibility that he has, and I think it's consistent across his filmmaking. But also the atmosphere that he brought on set, you know, he is an absolute live wire. And he was always on go. It was like as if he started the morning and rather than drinking a cup of water, he had seven shots of coffee, of espresso, you know? And I think that sometimes really lifted us in the times where the shoots were long or we were like, if something was a bit knotty, he'd come in and that, I think that energy will transfer onto the screen as well. I really enjoyed working with him on this season.
Yeah, and I mean, you get it right from episode one of series three. I mean, you kick off with this, you've got this fentanyl-laced cocaine mishap that has occurred. You've got people bleeding from the eyes from like 2 minutes into the first episode of the third series. And there is just this kind of quite live wire energy. And I mean, obviously, the hallmark of Gangs, and I think what has made it for so many of us such compulsive viewing. You've got this almost Shakespearean level of interfamily drama, but you do have these incredible set pieces. Series one, I'm thinking the Doss House fight. I'm thinking the bar fight. Series two, you've got the Nuria Bang sequence, which is amazing. The Hush fight, which is probably one of my favorite things I've seen on telly.
You call it the Hush fight as well? Is that just because of me?
Well, yeah, because everyone's got to be quiet. So it's the Hush fight.
Yeah, cool. It makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've just never heard anybody else refer to it in the same way, which is really exciting for me.
But the Hush fight. And then right from the beginning of series three, you drop in there, you've got the fairground fight at the end of the first episode, which A, should win an award for best use of a high strike hammer. B, should win the award for best use of the twisters at a fairground. And I'm just wondering for you, like, three series in, obviously you've fully given yourself physically over to learning this choreography, to getting stuck in with the action. How's your evolution in terms of your involvement with the creative process on the fight choreography for Gangs? How's that evolved over your time working on it?
You know what? I would love to say that I've now gotten to a point where I'm adept enough to design a fight myself, but that's not true. All praise has to go to Adam Horton, who was our stunt choreographer and fight director and second unit director on this season. Because also I would turn up to like the first couple of days of rehearsal or pre-production and he'd show me this previs that he'd made and I'd just be gobsmacked, you know. I would look at that and be like, I'm so excited that I will get to perform this. There are fights that I'm not in this year as well where I was furious and jealous because like that action is just so cool and entertaining and gripping. So I'm still at a position, well, not unfortunately, it's a very good position to be in, whereby I just get to watch them work, watch them play, and then just jump in at the point that it's time for performance.
Yeah, and you watch the show as well, don't you? Like, you're a fan of the series as well as making it, if I'm right.
You know what? I'm very proud of it. Like, I'm very proud of the work that we've done. I'm very proud of all of the performances and all the cast and crew that we have. But I really actually watch it once with my family and then let it go, you know?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know how other actors do it, but I think it's difficult to, I find it really difficult to watch something objectively that I've created.
Yeah.
You know? But conversely, I'll watch it back and have like lots of wonderful reminiscent memories. And oh, I remember where we were when we did that. Oh, that was a really hard shoot. I struggle to like watch the story of it because I'm so close to it. But I am super proud of all the work that we've done on it.
Yeah, and just sort of touching on that idea of memory, and you know, there are actors in this series now, and obviously people behind the camera as well that you've worked with for years. Do you remember how you felt going in for day one on series one versus how it feels now when you're coming back to start series three?
Obviously, when you're beginning something, it's like your first day at school, you know? It's a bit
Yeah.
like, oh, is everybody gonna like me? Am I good at my job? Am I the right person? Had they cast me correctly? Am I gonna let anybody down? Whereas when you're coming back for season three, all of that stuff is alleviated because you've been co-signed not only by the viewers and their response to the work, but by production, and the success of the show itself is proof that we're in a good place. We're doing the right thing. We're in the right direction. And then you can come into it with a lot more confidence. I feel like a sixth former coming back for season three, you know, like, this is my school. This is my turf. I know how everything runs. I can skip the line at the canteen, all of that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
There's a comfort that comes from coming back to a season over and over again. And I hope that this won't be the last time we get to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I won't get too much into it because it is one of those shows that, like, you find there aren't that many, like, fan theories that are built around the show, but, like, there is a lot of, I really need to know what's going to happen because of how twisty and turny it is. So I will delicately stray away from what I will just sort of loosely say are some shocking developments over the course of this series. But I was wondering, like, the way that you take things in series three, and you know, this sort of comes circles, it brings us full circle with when we were talking about how Elliot's changed over the three series. Do you think at this point that there is still any sort of a way back for Elliot from the underworld that he has now become so accustomed to? Do you as an actor have to go, this is the path he's on now, and I don't see a way off it, or are you able to separate the two? Do you still try and believe in the good in him, is I guess what I'm basically trying to ask.
Yeah, I think it's important for all actors to have empathy for their character, to really be able to understand them in order to portray them correctly and to display their nuance. I think the idea of just bad people and villains is a little antiquated now.
Yeah.
And I think the redemption arc, or the possibility of one, is what people would be interested to watch. And either you descend completely into the darkness and you meet your bitter end there, or there's like, because people should be able to watch it and be like, oh, actually, you know what? I'm not a perfect person either. And
Yeah.
I know that if I work hard enough, or if I have the right intention, then I can improve on my situation, or like rebuild a relationship, or continue to practice a goodness that I believe is inside of me.
Yeah.
And I think Elliot is no different. If we look at where he's come from, we met him at a point of grief at the first in the beginning of the first season. He'd lost his wife and child, and he was grieving that and looking to put himself into dangerous situations, either to end his life or to feel something.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with every season, there's another instance or trigger of that grief
Yeah.
response that he has. So, I mean, like, I pray for healing for him. Maybe if he can see a therapist and sort through his issues, there's
Series
something
four
there.
is
But
just, yeah, series four is just 10 hour-long
hey, one of the
episodes of
shrinks say,
therapy.
yeah,
Yeah,
just
I mean,
sat
I'd be
there.
in for that, to be honest. But
But no,
before.
really, really and truly, though, I do think that should the writers wish to go in that direction, there is I think there is the possibility for redemption. That said, if the writers aren't interested in that and they want to go deeper and darker, then I'm there for that journey as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're both such sort of tantalizing paths, I imagine, as an actor, but for us as viewers. And I've got to let you go very soon. But it is interesting to me that Gangs has this reputation for hyper-violence, and it is an incredibly violent show. I mean, even for my sort of like stern stomach, there are things that I've gone, bullet swallowing in series two was pretty rough. There's a thing that you do with a vice this series that I was like, yeah. Someone that uses their hands a lot wasn't feeling great watching that. But there is an almost There's almost a cathartic quality to the show without wanting to sound too sadistic, but like you get to see people exploring very human emotions in the most extreme possible hyper reality situations. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And when you speak about the Vice, I was able, oh my God, that sounds awful. But there was something really dangerously, darkly enjoyable about that. And I'm really glad that it was fake and that I wasn't actually hurting the actor who was performing that role. But it definitely triggers something in me, that exploration as to how resilient is the human body? Let me find out if I just turn this wrench, this Vice a little further, you know? So, yes, I would like, I don't know, I hope that people are able to, like, firstly, don't try this at home, and B, have their catharsis from watching rather than, like, being inspired by it. That would be really sad if people were.
Yeah, it's a safe and controlled environment on both the viewers
exactly,
and the actors' side, luckily. And just before I let you go,
it feels like that disclaimer that happens at the beginning of, like, wrestling, where it's like, this is performed by professionals, do not try these stunts at home. Maybe I should get Sky to put that at the front of the Gangs of London episode.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, especially episode. I think it's 4, possibly where the Vice comes in. Mm-hmm. It should definitely just be like lock up your vices. Make sure that no small children or animals are allowed anywhere near vices after watching this. But yeah, before I let you go, man. There's, you know, over the course of this series, I think naturally it was going to happen, but you know, Joe Cole, yourself, Paparazzi Adu. There is a vacancy for James Bond at the moment. Amazon have just taken over creative lead. Is that still an itch that you would be interested in scratching? But maybe more interestingly, given how Elliot has evolved over the course of 3 series of Gangs, would you be interested in a Bond villain even, perhaps?
Hey, like, I've loved the franchise since I was a very small boy. It's something that I've shared with my father for very many years. So, like, to be involved in any capacity would be wonderful, but I can't pin my career to whether or not something's going to happen, you know? I'm just taking every project as it comes and having the best time that I can whilst I do so.
Well, we're having a very good time watching these projects that you are committing yourself to. And if Gangs of London Series 4 is Elliot's redemption, if we get a Gangs of London Series 4, I'm all in for it. If Gangs of London Series 4 is Elliot doubling down with 2 vices and he doesn't stop turning the wrench, I will also still be watching.
I'll be there with bells on.
That was Sharpay Dorisu. Time now for news. What have you got for me, Boydie?
Well, there's quite big awards news this week. Kay, this morning, I noticed on her Instagram, posted about the P&O must-see moment award at the BAFTAs.
Really?
Yes.
The P&O must-see moment.
Steady,
is that what it is?
Steady.
Do you know
they're
what?
The sponsors.
I know.
Of the thing.
What a great ambassador Boyd is to remember. Well done.
Thank you.
I just, yeah.
Thank you. But.
Oh, my God.
What?
We should totally go on a cruise together. And do pilot on the cruise.
Brilliant.
Come on.
Oh, you'd be like at the bar all the time, just
how
like
much fun, though?
Knocking them back.
Come on. I think you'd get seasick.
I don't know that I'd like a cruise. I think I'd feel
a bit
hemmed
like
in by you know, being stuck on the boat.
Same. It worries me. I don't.
We'd definitely kill each other, but
yeah.
Imagine,
I'm
like,
not even.
Just...
It doesn't even have to be with you two that it worries me. Just being stuck,
just being
in
stuck
the middle
on
of the
boat.
Sea. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a bit. What does it appeal to you?
I think if P&O wanted to send us on a cruise, I would definitely go.
I mean, look, I think that's fair. If P&O 100% want to send us on some sort of luxury cruise, I would go.
We do a pilot live, like an episode where people can come and watch on deck.
I do remember having a conversation with, because they've been sponsoring the TV Awards, BAFTA TV Awards, for a couple of years now. And I think last year I remember talking to the P&O dude saying, you know, we will, you know, yeah, should give definitely give it a go, try it out. The other thing is you get people on cruises who, like journalists, doing talks. You could do one on, like, The Expanse or something.
Do you think that would be well attended?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not.
A Wheel of Time talk.
You could do it. I mean, you could do... I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah, lots of men overboard and women. But you could do like a, you could create like a fantasy cruise special where you are the star.
Cosplay.
Yeah, no. You do a series of talks over a week, say, and they advertise it as a fantasy special, and it'll get loads of people.
It's just a way of driving people ashore.
I think it would sell out. I think it would do really well. I might suggest it to
P&O. I think this might be a lucrative.
I'll suggest it to P&O and see what they say.
All right. Let
anyway.
Me know.
The point is, they are the sponsors of the BAFTA TV Awards, and they've announced. So all the nominations come out next week. As announced today, this morning, on Thursday, by the time this comes out, it'll be a few days old news. But the six memorable moments, and I'm going to see which one you'll vote for, James.
Right.
You are.
Oh, my God. This is like the Micro Wave thing, isn't it?
Well, Micro Wave was one of the ones.
Didn't it win?
A couple of years ago. I don't think it won. Maybe I'm wrong. I can't remember. I don't think it won. But yeah, that was when, what's her name?
Nigella
Lawson said the word Micro Wave, randomly pronounced it like that.
Yeah.
Not
she
like
said she
deliberate
did it as a
mispronounced.
Joke.
She did it as yeah,
it was a joke.
Yeah. Unlike your accidental mispronunciations, pronunciations, even.
The irony being.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's fine. Keep it in. I don't mind. Yeah,
there
that
is,
was deliberate on her. But anyway, the six nominated memorable moments are Bridgerton, the carriage scene where Colin admits his true feelings for Penelope. James, do you
yeah,
that?
James got excited about that. That's basically when they got on it in the carriage.
You've never watched Bridgerton, have you?
No, well, I watched the beginning of.
Oh, right.
The beginning of each season, except
right.
The first one.
He saw that scene because he couldn't stop talking about it.
Yeah, Gavin and Stacey, the finale, which is when in the wedding scene where Smith gets
spoilers.
Well, yeah, where Smithy gets mixed opinion before deciding whether to marry Sonia.
Right.
That's that moment. There were loads of different moments vying for that, weren't there? But that's the one they came up with. Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, when sub-postmistress Joe followed the advice to the letter on a call to the Horizon helpline, but finds the amount she owes doubles. I'm laughing because it was quite a distressing scene, and that is, yeah, that's
Boyd laughs moment. In the face of distress.
Oh, thanks, Kate. Gosh, one glass of champagne.
She's quite punchy
yeah.
under a glass of champagne.
Troublemaker,
isn't she?
Stirrer. Literally a stirrer.
I was gently teasing
yeah.
you.
Not that gently.
I only tease people I love.
Now she's going to perk up. Her favourite rivals.
Yes.
Which is with the naked tennis.
Oh, of course it was the naked tennis.
Yes.
Alex's
strictly,
tassel.
Yeah. Strictly
give
your favourite.
What they want.
Strictly your favourite, James. Chris McCausland's performance to You Never Walk Alone.
Sure. Sure.
Indelibly printed on your brain.
Yes.
And finally, Traitors, which was the Paul is my son, but Ross isn't my son, but Ross is. Well, which was not for the last, not for the episode, not for the series of Traitors that we just watched, for the year before the series of Traitors, because it's just in January of that year that it came out.
It's a good lineup.
Good list. Hmm. Which would you vote for?
None of them.
Oh.
I'd vote for the big old fight in the White Tower from the first episode of the third season of The Wheel of Time.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what I would
How
vote for.
You can go there for next year.
Yeah, I'll put it forward for next year's. Now, so now, remind me, BAFTA's still doing that ridiculous thing where you're only allowed to vote for like, one episode.
BAFTA ridiculous.
A very specific episode, that's right?
Oh, no, that's in the general jurors for BAFTA TV Awards.
I
yes,
would say the
of
clue
which,
of this is in the title, most yeah, memorable
are,
moment.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I'm not saying this. Specific award. I'm saying for the BAFTA TV stuff,
yes.
You're not allowed to consider any other episodes except for the one episode that has been put forward.
Completely, yeah.
Which is impossible to do because if you watch the show, I put it to you, no juror is able to take a single episode in isolation if they watch the whole show.
Even if you've watched the whole show, because you know what the criteria is, you literally with your eyeballs just watch that episode and judge it on that. I think it's fine. I think it's possible.
I disagree.
Oh,
that's unlike you.
I'm doing a jury on Friday, funnily enough.
Really? What category? Are you allowed to say?
No, I'm not allowed to say.
It's a secret.
It's a secret, yeah.
Kay, are you juroring?
No, I'm not.
You're not.
But you did juror RTS, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, because that's the other bit of news, awards-based news, is the RTS nominations came out. I'm going to run through every category.
Oh, good God.
Charming. But
it's a TV podcast.
I mean,
exactly.
It's true.
It's a TV podcast. Thank you, Kay. But The comedy drama Borders, which is that show I really like.
I like that.
Yeah, Alma's Not Normal, also
yes,
really
also good.
One of my favourites, and Ludwig.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, Ludwig.
Dimly lit, but I enjoyed it.
Dimly lit. It was dimly lit.
Oh yeah, it was dimly lit.
Well, only The Office. The Office was quite moody.
That's
had
right.
a moody
yeah.
lighting
yeah.
scheme.
But even the kitchen. Honestly, you needed a minus
yeah,
torch.
You didn't. Actually, kitchen should always be well lit.
Mm. Wait, that's how our big light energy came
yeah,
from.
Yeah, like big
that.
Lights are okay in kitchens and bathrooms, but nowhere else.
That's the show
else.
That precipitated.
Wow. Mm. I wouldn't have remembered that. Comedy performance female. This is a good list. Amy Lou Wood.
Yes. For?
Daddy Issues.
Yes.
Which was good.
Yes. Michelle, you have my approval. I will allow it.
Michelle de Swart.
I'm delighted
Spence,
about that.
Yeah. She's brilliant in Spence.
Yeah.
Really good.
She's great.
And Sophie Willan in Amazon. Oh, well, that's a tough category, guys, because she's fantastic.
Ooh, who would I go for?
Yeah.
Amy. Anyway, let's move on.
I think I got Comedy performance, Male. Jim Howick in Here We Go, which is the really underrated BBC One sitcom that I really like about the family, filmed by the teenage boy. It's really good. This is Naban Rizwan for Chaos. This was The Axed. Remember? The very famous
The Axed, expensive
very
Netflix
expensive
show.
Netflix show. I would say that's a surprise. And Oliver Saville as in Changing Ends, which is the Alan Carr comedy. He plays the young Alan Carr, and that's sweet, I think. He's been
he's great as a young Alan.
He does do a brilliant job.
He does.
Some might say, I mean, where is James Corden? Where are James Corden and Ruth Jones from those two categories? Particularly a Ruth. Like, I think that's ridiculous that she hasn't been nominated, I have to say. But, you know, that's just me, Kay. Mm-hmm. Drama series, Wolf Hall, The Mirror and the Light, famously reviewed by us when we didn't know whether...
famously reviewed by us.
Whether it was a ghostly or not.
You didn't know what was fact and fiction.
Now, this is going to be exciting, I think, for James. Supercell,
come on.
Yes.
That's and perked up.
Yeah, you've perked up. And Industry.
Also
which
good.
I love. Yeah. One of my favourites. I won't get through the entertainment performance ones. Lead actor. I'll do lead actor female and male.
And comedy.
Comedy itself. Lead actor female. Anna Maxwell Martin in Until I Kill You, which she was brilliant in. Ambika Mod in One Day. Interesting. Monica Dolan from Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, and she was absolutely brilliant. Leading actor male, Adil Akhtar from Show Trial. Did we do that?
Yes, we did.
He's brilliant in that. Lenny James in Mr. Loverman.
Your fave.
Thank you. And Ben Whishaw in Black Doves.
That's a tough category,
isn't it? Mm. And limited series or single drama, Mr. Bates, This Town, which was the Stephen Knight thing about the...
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and Breathtaking.
Can't think what that is.
Yes, that was the pandemic.
That was the pandemic.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was.
Hang on. Wasn't that ages ago?
This is all last year.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And scripted comedy. This is interesting, isn't it? Because We Are Lady Parts nominated. Things You Should Have Done. You know what that is? That's the BBC Three comedy that Joanna Page from Gavin and Stacey kind of slagged off on her TV podcast.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Causing a bit of a stir.
Yes, and then the viral video of the creator of the show responding to it. Yes.
That's that show. And then the third show to be nominated is Gavin and Stacey. So they're going to have to share. I wonder if they put them on a table together.
That would be hilarious.
Isn't it good?
Yeah.
I do slightly feel for... Joanna Page's thing, because it's her honest opinion. She's allowed to have an opinion, you know. I mean, I disagree with her because I really like the show.
I think it seemed ungracious because it felt like punching down a little bit at a sort of a young new writer, which maybe wasn't the best mood. But...
Sure. Yeah. Do you want me to finish with...
A bit like you with Wheel of Time, really.
Yeah, it's very similar. Yeah.
Not again.
Supporting actor and supporting actress, do you want to know? Right.
Go on, we'll finish.
Supporting actor female, Monica Dolan again for Sherwood. Catherine Parkinson, Rivals, your favourite. And Jessica Gunning, Baby Reindeer. Now, one might say that's a category. Is she supporting? I mean, that's interesting.
Good point.
And then supporting actor male, Danny Dyer.
Yes.
For Rivals as well.
Come on, Danny.
Sonny Walker for The Gathering. I don't think he's brilliant in that. He's the young. He's the kind of brother, the older brother, and he's very protecting of his younger sibling, etc. He is brilliant in that. And my favourite, and I think this is a brilliant nomination, is McKinley Belcher III. Do you remember him in Eric?
Yeah,
he was the detective, the gay detective, secretly gay detective, and he was fucking brilliant in that show. And I'm very pleased that he's been nominated.
Just thinking about it, the Jessica inclusion in that, which we're querying, maybe it's because in the lead actress, they knew that she wouldn't stand a chance. So, it's better for her to get an award than not.
Definitely tactical. Yeah, this happens all the time in the film awards and stuff. Yeah,
that's what,
this is, we're used to this. But I think you're precisely right. Yeah. And then finally, writing team, Kunk on Life for comedy, Sophie Willan, Amazon Not Normal, Nida Manzur, We Are Lady Parts, again, Gavin Stacey should have been nominated. And drama, Slow Horses, Will Smith, Wolf Hall, Peter Strachan, and Dominic Treble-Collins, K, your mate.
Yeah,
and
I didn't know that.
Wade for Rivals, yeah.
Oh, bravo.
There you go. I have now concluded the awards section of news. I can only apologise. Wait till we get the BAFTA award nominations.
Oh, my God.
I'll leave Kate to do the rest of the news.
Well, some exciting news for me in Shrinking, season three. So we've been told that Jeff Daniels is being cast as Jason Segel's dad. Jason plays Jimmy, so that'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
I do like Jeff Daniels an awful lot. Mm.
Does it mean you'll finally catch up with Shrinking?
Is the main reason you like Jeff Daniels because he was in
the newsroom? Yeah. Yes. And that is exactly the reason, yes.
Please,
but I think he's great anyway. But also, I've got a lot of respect for Jeff Daniels because remember when he did Dumb and Dumber and he was offered, I can't remember the sum, but the studio offered him, I think it was something like $60,000 for that co-lead role. Jim Carrey was on $15 million. Mm. And obviously, they didn't want to cast him. This is my understanding, so if I'm, you know, like slandering anyone, I apologise. My understanding of this is they didn't want to. I'm just going to do it anyway. Yeah. So I apologise, but I'm still going to say it. Yeah. My understanding of this was that they didn't really want to cast him, so they made him this lowball offer. And instead of rejecting it, he was like, no, I'm going to take it. Because he knew that it would raise his profile, and he did it anyway.
He didn't get any back end?
I don't know. I've not.
He was
his
back end alone.
Steady.
Well, he's front end.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so. But I mean, I've no idea. Mm. I would have thought if it was meant to be a low ball offer, they wouldn't have said, "Yeah, here's like a percentage of the gross."
You'd think, yeah.
But
forgive me for moving away from films. But are you committed now to watching Shrinking? Catching up?
No, I'm not. It's on the sofa list. It has a place. God. It's just not that high up.
Do you know how many people get in touch and say, James would love this if he watched it?
I don't know that I would. Like, I think I would like
it. How can you make that judgment without having seen it?
You've met me, right?
No, that's true.
I don't think there's anything you would dislike about that.
No, I think it would be fine. Yeah. But I just think, you know, ultimately a rewatch of Andor One is more important.
Okay, listen, God. I can't.
Yeah. Okay, look, if we're talking about Andor, we should say the first three episodes of Andor are available for free on YouTube. They've made those available. So if you don't subscribe to
of
Disney
season
Plus.
One.
Of season one. Not season two, obviously, because it hasn't even aired yet. But yes, we want to watch those. And Joey, do you see this? They've the first few episodes of Joey. Mm. And that's not been available for ages, but you can watch on YouTube.
On the Friends YouTube channel, yeah. The interesting thing about that is that Joey has not been seen since it first aired.
No, for good reason.
And do you remember, it was a big Channel 5 acquisition in this country, in the UK. Channel 5.
I wonder how much they paid for that.
Oh, a lot.
Now
known as 5, exactly. Yeah.
You and 5.
But yes, but that interesting underlining the power of YouTube, which in...
You and Tube.
You... Jesus Christ. Yes. It's how important YouTube is in this day and indeed age.
Indeed.
Carry on.
News from ITV. I've got to just make a little note on press releases. We get a lot of press releases coming through. And I have to say, out of all the channels, a little bit of feedback is that the ITV one, the way they present it is, they don't have any pictures or anything. It's not very visually exciting to look at. I don't know if you...
So Kay would like to offer constructive feedback on the presentation of the ITV press releases.
Genuinely, when they come through sometimes, they're just
a wall
literally...
Of text.
Wall of text, not even fonts, just like maybe the logo of ITV and that's it. But genuinely, they have really exciting shows and news to discuss, whereas with other channels, they have like the pictures.
Singing and dancing. Yeah, I know. No, I do know what you mean.
I think it depends whether or not they've cast a show yet, right? Because I think if there's a show, they're announcing the cast to a show, then they'll have pictures of them. I think, but often ITV will announce a project and it hasn't been cast yet, or they don't want to tell you.
I think even before pre-casting, they should make it jazz it up a bit. Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
But they have really good shows. That's the point.
Kay is available to jazz up your press releases.
Side hustle.
I just have to learn InDesign. Yeah. I'm sure it's fine. Anyway, no, but the reason why I'm mentioning this is because they sent out a press release revealing the news that they are making a 6-part drama, relationship drama called Adultery, written by Danny Brocklehurst, which is exciting. So that is legitimately very exciting news. It's apparently going to focus on Tom's 15-year-old daughter, Jess, who has found love with her schoolmate, Ollie. They're all loved up, et cetera, et cetera. And then Tom meets Ollie's mum, Beth, in the most unexpected of circumstances. And essentially, it's about how they navigate this, like two families' lives potentially turned upside down forever because Tom and Beth, they kind of fancy each other. So, yeah.
I mean, it's in the title, isn't it?
And have they cast it yet?
No, they have not.
Ah, you see? This is my fear. I think that, if it was an ITV casting, that's where there would be pictures in it.
No, I take your point about the pictures. I'm just talking generally as an aesthetic.
I like that we've gone into press release chat.
Sorry. Don't mean to slag them off. It's just that genuinely, sometimes I don't even note the press release.
The thing, Kay, you know, she's just, that's it. Kay, you're always coming for ITV. I just don't know what's wrong with you. Why do you always have to stick the boot in? Poor old ITV.
It'll be Channel 5.
It'll be next. Channel 5 next, yeah. She'll be after Channel 5's press release. Yeah. Extraordinary. Channel Such a 5, snob. You're so elitist.
Channel 5 did have a big launch the other night where they announced like 100 hours, extra hours of drama or something. They're really
interesting.
I thought of you. I've slammed the desk.
What nonsense has stripped across this week?
Actually, have you continued watching the show you promised to?
I'd have watched more episodes. I haven't watched the finale yet.
I did notice one of our listeners on the subreddit was extolling the virtues of the au pair. They're having a whale of a time.
A couple of people on my desk in the office are really enjoying it as well. Yeah. I mean, purely on an entertainment basis. No, I'm not talking about quality here. But I think it is entertaining. Yeah. Did you see the You trailer, James?
I didn't watch the trailer. Oh, no. It's very, but I knew that it dropped.
Yes. It's very promising.
Yes.
James. You and you.
You are very good, yes.
Thought you'd enjoy that.
It arrives soon. Yeah, I'm very excited about the... We should hopefully get screeners any day now.
Yes, looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah, and shout out to Leo Richardson, who's my friend who I've known for years, who's a writer on You.
Is he?
He messaged me to say, because when he put the trailer up on his Instagram and I applauded it. I did an applaudy emergency and he said, I really hope you like what we've done with the ending. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, so do we.
That's a lot of pressure on you.
Also, not being funny, but you best up your game with the press releases because Kay will fucking come for you.
Netflix always has pictures in their press releases.
It's the fonts, anyway.
Oh, it's the fonts.
I'm being a font fascist.
The fonts.
The Fonzie.
Typographical feedback. Anyway, Landman, the Taylor Sheridan show, has been renewed for a second season, so that's exciting.
Unlike,
Cruel Intentions. Which, sadly...
Yeah. I mean, it was poor.
It was.
And this is a show that, I mean, obviously, I'm sure it hasn't got particularly great ratings either, but I think if it wasn't, it was universally slammed, I think, pretty much, not just by us, which must have contributed to the decision not to persevere with it.
Yeah.
What, pilots...
But in general, look,
no, it was definitely us. Okay, we're the ones who killed it. Yeah.
100%. Gosh, can you imagine if we wielded that power?
Yeah. Wield of time. No, okay. Fine.
I knew where your brain was going.
Yeah, you did. You really did. You saw that one going. What else has happened? Poker Face got a surprise trailer and indeed an announcement for season two. So, season two of that show will be landing on the 8th of May. In the US, anyway. Don't know when it's landing here.
Yeah. I wasn't into it. You two loved it.
It's good. Like, it's episodic and, you know, it's an investigative procedural, but it's really well done.
Did you see the list of guest stars in season two?
No, tell me, Boydie.
Alia Shawkat, Awkwafina, Ben Marshall, BJ Novak, Cynthia Erivo, you may have heard of her, Gabby Hoffman, Giancarlo Esposito, who I think is a star of the new issue of Empire. I was looking at today.
Always.
Yeah. Hayley Joel Osment, John Cho, John Mulaney, Justin Theroux, Katie Holmes, Kevin Corrigan, Kumail Nanjiani.
So just the one or two,
this is just in one season. Mm. Melanie Linsky, Patty Harrison, Rhea Perlman from Taxi and Cheers, etc. Richard Kind from Curb Your Enthusiasm, etc. Simon Rex and Taylor Schilling.
Longer than TV
nominations. I can only surmise that
this is a 50-episode series.
Yeah, it does feel that way.
I mean, that is a lot of people.
Yeah, it's great. So excited about that.
Also,
you know, controversial as it may be to bring up Harry Potter, you know, they've been eking out the announcements of the cast for the various people. And, you know, John Lithgow, Dumbledore, woohoo. You know, I didn't care a bit. However.
That was brilliant. John Lithgow, woohoo.
No, but that's no disrespect to John Lithgow, but I was thinking, Dumbledore, like whatever, Dumbledore.
John Lithgow, one of our greatest actors.
You know, he's great. I love to say one of our greatest actors. He doesn't belong to us.
No, but the world's
greatest actors. But yeah, it's Dumbledore. I don't care. But when they announced but Severus Snape, Papa Esiedu.
Yes, yeah, that's
good casting.
Yeah,
I am fucking on board for that. So that weirdly, that's the thing that's made me interested.
They've got him back.
Yeah, they've got me back. Yeah. I'm back in the room.
And they need him because, you know, it's only Harry Potter.
That's it.
You know.
Yeah, they need my endorsement.
Relieved execs in a room saying, "Thank God, Dyer's in."
Yeah,
that's it.
You mentioned Hacks earlier, right? Well, Hacks has gone from the show that no one knew when it was going to arrive. It took like 18 months to reach our shores, and finally Sky did a deal. Now they're showing the next series, season 4, which you spoke to, what's her name about?
Caitlin Olsen
about this morning, on the day after it goes out in the States, 11th of April.
Wow.
Starts on Sky on 11th of April, which
Thank
is brilliant.
Thank you, Sky.
Yeah, so it's gone from one extreme to the other.
Yeah. That's super organised.
We're not complaining, though.
No, God, no. Very
Again,
great.
Clearly the pressure of this podcast has caused them to pull
the
finger out.
Exactly.
Gosh, if only.
If only. Yeah. I mean, I think news ended 16 months ago when Boyd read out all of the... RTS nominations. Right, is it RTS?
RTS, Royal Television Society.
To be fair to Boydo, that was actual news rather than Andor Series 1 is on YouTube.
Hey, that's big news. People watch Andor for free. That's a fucking public service. Honestly.
Indeed.
Anyway, should we move on to reviews?
Yes.
Okay, let's do that. So first up this week, we have Happy Face, which is a true crime dramatization based on the podcast of the same name by Melissa Moore. And this podcast recounted her experiences as the daughter of Keith Jesperson, a.k.a. the Happy Face killer who murdered eight women in the 1990s. Dennis Quaid plays the creepy killer in this one, and Annalee Ashford is playing Melissa, his daughter. Now, Kate, you do enjoy a bit of true crime, it has to be said. So did it put a smile on your face? Tell me, what did you think?
Do you know what? As you're alluding to, it's true crime's not my bag. However, I tell you what's interesting about this. So you've said the premise, but basically Melissa is working as a makeup artist on a show. And they get caught. It's Dr. Greg, played by David Harewood, we should say.
Yeah, Dr. Greg, not Dr. Phil, which is standing in for.
Mm-hmm. And they get a call to say that Keith has got in touch, her dad, but they don't know it's her dad, saying that he will reveal there's a ninth victim. He's admitted to eight. He will reveal a ninth victim, but he'll only tell Melissa. And they don't know why. But obviously she knows because she's steadfastly ignored him. He's been sending letters to her. She doesn't want to have anything to do with him.
Understandably.
And being extremely manipulative, he goes down this route. And so she agrees to meet him in prison, etc. And then we watch it unfold. So what's interesting for me, as someone who doesn't, as you say, doesn't like true crime, is that it tells it from the perspective of what it must be like for a relative of a serial killer. So, you know, the conflict of emotions they feel. First of all, the guilt by association, the conflict of emotions of, you know, the fact that she still, in a way, she loves her one version of her dad because he was always kind to her, right? And so it's how she makes peace with that of like, okay, no, that was one version, but obviously he's this awful, you know, hideous monster. And so I think that's the fascinating part of this. That's what's interesting to me. It's like how she navigates those emotions and how she sort of like begins to go through her old memories and actually start to find clues. And she's re-traumatizing herself, but she sees that it's necessary to kind of help this ninth victim's family get some kind of closure.
This show, did it not give you the ick? Like it gave me.
I mean, it's about a serial killer.
No, but true crime can. Often gives you the it. But there's something specifically about this because, obviously, he's still alive, Jesperson. He's serving life in prison, and there was just something about the dramatization of him, the portrayal of him, and when she, you know, when they're talking, like there's a, I don't know whether it's a tonal thing, because certainly early on, there's the tone, it's not like a dark, oppressive tone. There's almost a lightness of tone to this at points that just made me feel a bit icky.
I agree. Oh, I 100% had the same response, yeah. And it was interesting, it's directed by, I don't know if you noticed this, it's directed by Michael Showalter, who is mainly known as a comedy director. Mm. He directed Wet Hot American Summer, which is one of the most brilliantly stupid comedy films of recent memory. And I think there's a weirdly inadvertent, you know, the bit in the beginning, the moment where I got the ick from it was in the pre-title sequence, in the opening thing, and you kind of meet her character, you see her in a workplace as the makeup artist on the show. You introduce to the whole idea that she's got something that's a grating with her. You see brief flashbacks to, you know, whatever she's thinking about when she goes to the shop and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then finally she's sitting there and she explains to everyone, they're going, why are you this thing happening? Why do you care? What's the matter with you? And she goes, because he's my father. Like that. And you're like, oh my God, that's so melodramatic and over the top.
Yes.
And it's weird that you get that kind of, I thought, like, icky, sticky thing. And then the fact that it's all from her own point of view, obviously, that she is the actual daughter of him, and she's obviously given her approval to this series. It's adapted from her own podcast. But it is definitely does not try very hard to avoid melodrama.
No, it doesn't.
And almost like inadvertent comedic moments, I think.
But
Dennis Quaid.
He's like that, yeah. That, I feel like that character has got a sense of it anyway, because like that cat and mouse as well, when they're in that, she goes to visit him in prison. Yeah. And
it's very sub-Science of the Lambs.
Yeah, I mean, really sub-sub-subbity-sub. Like it's in the sub-basement. Also, there is a bit in this. I mean, one of the, I mean, I've genuinely the clunkiest thing in this episode. There is an eavesdropped phone call.
Yes.
And it's just so like, it's just so like, I'm going to say it in an incredibly overt and deliberate way so that if someone were listening, they'd know exactly what I was talking about, despite the fact that no one on the phone speaks like this.
Mm. Yeah. And you wouldn't have it on speakerphone.
No, I mean, for fuck's sake. Like, yeah, genuinely. So that annoyed me. But I, again, I just thought I could not shake the ick all the way through this. I just felt a bit ew.
I actually didn't pick up on it. I mean, I just found it fascinating.
Heartless, that's your problem.
No, I just found, because it's someone who literally, I rail against true crime, but I found this an interesting take on it from the perspective.
I do know what you mean in terms of the perspective. The idea of it, like to explore the psychology of a close family member, of someone who turns out to be, this is a guy who, you know, as we know of, like, murdered 8 women and may have killed many, many more. I think he claimed to have killed like 160 people, but that was never been proven or, you know, confirmed. But if you're going to do that, I feel like it's a kind of almost like a Fincher-esque Mindhunter type treatment that you kind of want to really get under the skin of the psychology of it. Not this sort of light and fluffy, slightly...
Except I read an interview with the showrunner of it, Jennifer Caciccio, and she was saying that she wanted to avoid it being a kind of psychological profile of the killer. She wanted to, so.
Oh yeah, but it's the daughter, isn't it?
Yeah. So all the emphasis is rightly on the daughter and victims, as apparently this however many episodes, eight episode series, goes on. And I get what she means. So it doesn't really. I mean, I think the David Fincher series was amazing. Mindhunter was fantastic. Where it's in the making, it's in the scripting and acting and direction that makes Mindhunter so brilliant.
Agreed.
Whereas this is, it feels quite basic, doesn't it? If you think of those two shows, so almost like beyond the fact that Mindhunter is to a large extent about the serial killers and their investigators, and this tries to be not so much about the serial killer, and yet it's got this Dennis Quaid performance, which is almost pantomime at various moments.
Yes, very much. I should say, when I said Mindhunter, I didn't mean focusing on him.
Right.
I meant that kind of tone and depth and seriousness, but looking at the psychology of what it's like to be the relative of someone think showcasing her, that is the way to go, 100%.
Yes. Yeah, so that's really interesting.
But it's the treatment that I
agree.
Don't
know. No, I agree with you. It's a really interesting, you know, idea, and to learn about a serial killer from the point of view of his daughter is fascinating. Mm. But this show, I do agree with James, is clunky. It's every now and then it's okay. Like I think David Harewood's really good is in a probably semi thankless role. It's like, you know, the kind of
Dr. Phil
as a Dr. Phil type, you know, quite exploitative show. But he manages to kind of convince that he's doing it for valid reasons, not just to kind of get ratings, etc. I think she's really good as well. I think as the daughter, Annalee Ashford, I think she's fantastic. But I think Dennis Quaid's all over the place, I have to say. It's just the whole thing, the dialogue, the way it's shot, it feels quite basic to me.
You're basic. Happy Face, Paramount Plus. When?
Friday, 21st of March, 2025.
Okay. Next up, we've got Gangs of London, which you've already heard a decent bit about from Sherpa Derisi. This is the third season. It sees former undercover cop Elliot dealing with threats from without and within as Boyd rustles through a magazine loudly.
My notes, a.k.a. my notes.
But he's a criminal overlord in this one. You know, the first season, if you remember, which had, it was Gareth Evans behind it, the man behind the raid, and Corin Hardy was making it with him as well. Incredibly violent, hugely gripping crime thriller. The second series, Gareth wasn't involved in, Corin Hardy took the reins on that. Almost leaned more into horror, I think, the second season. Like, it was really, really grim at times, which makes sense, I guess, given that it's Corin Hardy. Now, Corin Hardy has departed this as well now, and it's Peter McKenna who's kind of at the helm of this. So where does that leave the show, Boydie? Where does it leave it? Tell us.
It's a good question. I've always liked Gangs of London because it's been like a shamelessly over the top.
Yes.
Ultra-violent, spectacularly gory feast for the senses. It's always been very stylishly made. It feels like an expensive show as well, like production design, production values, etc. Absolutely up there. And, you know, a really good cast as well. Sherpa Derisi kind of started out as the cop, basically, yes, going undercover, now has completely become part of the whole running of the family, of the dodgy drug-dealing family. And he's absolutely brilliant. I'm sure he'll made for a great interview as well. And have you seen his new look? He's gone blonde. He's gone,
has
like,
he?
Yeah. He's got like blonde hair and kind of beard as well. He looks amazing. He looks very striking. And he's fantastic. Joe Cole, of course. Joe Cole has like been surprisingly returned in series two because he thought he was dead.
Mm.
And now I think, considering I'm just looking right now, a picture of him in the publicity stills from the show, he's back again. Despite at the end of season two, there was literally a cliffhanger, a hang where he's hanging off the edge, and he's fine. He survived it all. He's okay. But I won't say much more about what's happened to him because that would constitute a spoiler. So I'm a big fan of the show. I think it's always done really well. I thought this episode, the first episode, I've watched two or three now, I felt a little bit dialed down in terms of the stylization. I don't know if
Really.
I mean, there's still, don't get me wrong, there's still like multiple deaths from this drug thing that happened. There's an opening car chase kind of sequence that's very well done, that's mm-hmm. exciting. But compared to some of the deliberate excesses of previous opening episodes, in fact, particularly, I didn't feel like this was quite as intensely ridiculous, self-consciously aware.
Not enough avoid.
Yeah, but then I watched, then I carried on thinking, I wonder if this is just this episode, because I wanted to be fair to the new showrunner, etc. And actually, it ratchets it up quite a lot.
I was going to ask this, because I found the first episode quite tame, but also, it felt a little cheap. You know,
what?
Whereas it has felt quite lavish
less,
in the past.
It felt less lavish, yes.
Yeah.
But is that because of the settings?
Well, it's partly the set pieces, partly also like this dodgy CGI of blood, of which there was quite a lot.
But I
hadn't noticed much, okay. But I remember very early on what Corin
He's
and Gareth
did.
He's
very hyper focused on that kind of detail.
Was so, like, the violence was really full on. I felt on this, I thought, just these splashes of CGI blood everywhere, I thought it's just very obviously fake.
I think they've definitely always done CGI blood in it, almost like deliberately make it easier to digest the extraordinary extreme violence that is in the show. And then, and honestly, it was interesting. I'm glad I carried on watching it for a bit because I think I'm in halfway through episode three. I felt the same thing about it. It felt less expensive.
Yeah, it did. It's funny. Like, if you say Gangs of London and I think, you know, oh, prestige TV.
Yeah.
I watched this first episode and I thought, oh, Sky original. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Like, I had a little bit of that to it.
I understand what you're saying. But actually,
he knows exactly what I mean.
I do know exactly what you mean. No, I did, yeah, because I did feel the same. But it does pick up, I think.
I'm very pleased to hear that.
Yeah,
because also the performance is great. Michelle Fairley's great in it. Shobhi Dorisa is great in it.
So and it's got brilliant. My favourite new cast member though is Tania Miller.
Always brilliant.
Who's always
in everything.
And she plays the mayor of London.
Yes. Oh my God.
And what is brilliant is, let's just say she's cocaine adjacent.
Yes, she is.
And it's very entertaining.
Yeah, she's great.
She literally goes from like snorting coke to having a meeting about how to do drugs in London.
It's amazing.
It's very funny. Yeah. So there is a wit to it and a daring, and I think that comes out more as the series goes on. I think this was like an introductory consolidation episode, but as it goes on, I'm going to carry on watching it because I do love it. It's really entertaining.
I didn't have those objections. I think because I haven't watched entire series, right? I just watched the first episode to review on this because it is very violent.
It is very violent.
But I think there's something like quite beautiful about the violence. Like it's so stylized.
I didn't expect to hear you say that.
Yeah, I know. I said it last time I reviewed it as well.
Okay.
I find it palatable because of the beauty and like the theatrical nature of it. And because it's so stylized that I find it somehow I can tolerate it more. And this was super violent. It probably wasn't as violent as the last one we reviewed.
Full on.
And I think what I would say is I commend it for the summary at the beginning. I think they do a good summary.
Yeah.
So you're immediately caught up with what's going on, the flavour of it, the style, the levels of violence, etc. I think that does a really good job because not all shows do. Mm. I just really enjoyed it. I enjoyed what it's saying about the drugs epidemic in London, the hypocrisy, as you kind of alluded to, the fact, you know, like Zammo, you should just say no. If anything's going to be an anti-drugs message, it's watching this first episode, right?
I mean,
it is shocking.
Yeah. It's full on.
Yeah.
It is full on.
And also, I think Joe Cole was just vile in this role. He gives good bellend. He's bellend energy. He's so objectionable and vile and horrible in this that you know he does a good job as Sean.
Yeah. It's I think what I liked about this when it first aired, and it still has that quality, is that it's not, it's called Gangs of London, but it's not London. Like, it's not our London. Like, it's almost like Gotham City version of London. Like, it's a fantasy mirror, dark mirror image, I guess in the same way that Luther is, of London. And it never felt like it was supposed to be realistic or grounded. It's almost like a very sort of contemporary urban fantasy. And I quite like that about it. And again, as we've said, as Luther does the same thing. And I think it, so it plays by its own set of rules. And so it can afford to be over the top, a little bit silly, you know, a little bit sort of full on in place. And then you just kind of roll with it, which is nice. So I think, and it maintains that tone, certainly. But it's interesting what you say about the subsequent episodes, because I found this first one disappointing. And I was a bit like, oh, am I going to watch any more of these? But that's good to know. That is good to know.
Yeah. Do you find it silly?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
very much.
Self-consciously. Sometimes self-consciously.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, I suppose I haven't watched
it. It's definitely like,
it,
we're going to go crazy and mad over the top.
Yeah. It's wildly over the top.
At its best.
But works brilliantly. I know some of the set, but do you remember the season one, the farmhouse episode, which is incredible?
Also I thought you were going to say was didn't Corin Hardy show the first 10 minutes of season two at our podcast?
That's right. That's when we did our live show.
Yes, he did.
He showed the beginning of that. And Luan was there, the guy who plays
Luan.
That's
right. Yeah, who is great. He's still in it. He's still,
still around.
Somehow he's still there. Yes.
Yeah. Gangs of London season 3 then, which lands on Sky and now
Thursday the 20th of March 2025 9 p.m. and it's all available on Sky on demand as well, as is their wont.
Fabulous. Finally this week we have Protection on ITV, and this is a police series that focuses on the officers involved in witness protection, with Siobhan Finneran in the lead as DI Liz Niles, who is hard as Niles. See, that's a good joke. Anyway.
You should be arrested for that.
Thank you very much. So she
crimes against punning.
She's tasked with protecting a witness and his family from this local gangster. Kay, you are, of course, our very own original gangster. Please tell us about Protection.
It's very good and gripping, and you should watch it. That's my
That's
summary.
Kay's review. Right, yes. Boydie, what did you think?
Yeah. Sorry.
I love Siobhan Finneran. We all do, right?
And of course.
It's good to see her in this lead role as a detective. As you say, she works in witness protection. She's also juggling her very stressful job with quite a chaotic slash busy family life, in terms of she's got a teenage daughter, she's got a difficult ex, her father's got ailing health. And so we watch that all unfold, but she's also in charge of the protection of a witness in a very high profile case. And he is a criminal turned informant who is then going to testify against this big, big criminal boss. And they are like a mere 48 hours away from that happening when tragedy strikes. And then it's a scramble to figure out. Like, she is a very upstanding, she's moral police officer who's very good at her job, and let's just say she's had a lapse of judgment, and then she thinks, oh shit, is it because of me? And then she is stealthily tries to carry out her own investigation into what the hell's gone on. And the reason why also there's additional pressure is because Catherine Kelly, who plays DCI Hannah Wheatley, is hot on her tail. She's quite officious. She's trying to carry out the investigation into what happened. And so she's trying to outwit Catherine Kelly.
And you've got sort of jurisdictional overlap.
Yes. So there's office politics, as there always is. I just thought this was really well done, and it was so compelling. And I thought Siobhan Finneran is brilliant in it. So, and I didn't know anything about witness protection. I didn't know about the fact that, which obviously makes sense, and you guys will roll your eyes, but that other...
James will.
Yeah, because, you know, he's got RSI.
And
it's what he does. I didn't realise how in the police that other departments would know.
Yeah, because it's like firewalled off from the rest of the police force. To be fair, I didn't know that either. I thought that was really interesting.
It makes
absolute sense. Yeah, it makes absolute sense, but I didn't know that either. I thought that was an interesting insight into the way it all works.
Yeah, I think it was really good. I think it's fantastic to see her, isn't it? Because she is a great example of a supporting actress. I mean, I'm pretty sure she was nominated for Happy Valley, Best Supporting Actress. And she's the mother in Amazon Not Normal, and she does character parts. She's like what they would call a character actor. And to see her doing in the absolute lead role of this show and doing a brilliant job is fantastic. She's great. She's a little bit like she's having an affair, and just, you know, it's a multi-listed all the other things that she's dealing with whilst having to sort out a disastrous incident at the so-called safe house that she's supposed to be managing. So I think they do a really good job of piling on the pressure on her and making it so by the end of like the first episode, she's in the shit. She's literally like just wading through like nightmarish situations left, right, and center. And I think that really makes so it's almost like it's like a conspiracy thriller, as like a Line of Duty style, you know, deep into the, you know, when it was all about who's H, what is H, what the fuck's going on with H. It's reminded me of that rather than like a standard police procedural of any kind. So I think it's got a really strong conspiracy theory, conspiracy thriller backbone to it that works really well.
Plus, shining a light on what it must be like to have that high-powered job and still have to manage the house and all the different, issues with that.
Yeah, and the scenes. Oh, Catherine Kelly, who do you remember? She was in Mr. Bates, which is playing the woman who was in charge of the post office's publicity. She did a brilliant job at that. She does a great officious kind of like patronizing, and she's when they have these face-to-face meetings when they're both trying to assert their power over the other, those scenes are brilliant with them together, I think. So it's interesting that Catherine Kelly, who really is, she's known more as a lead actress. She's here playing the supporting role. You could have swapped them around. It's fascinating.
Yeah, you could easily.
Yeah, easily. Mm-hmm. But it's really good. Really good cast.
I don't know about that. I think Siobhan Finneran is perfectly cast in this role.
No, I'm not saying
she should
not
have the lead role.
No one is taking that from her.
Thank
good.
You.
Yeah. We're simply saying that could have gone either way.
Yeah, anyway, carry on.
Well, I mean, more like if you'd have had a press release from ITV without any pictures in it and it said, this show is going to star, you know, Catherine Kelly in the lead role and Siobhan Finneran as that, you would bat an eyelid.
So
I'm almost complimenting them. I'm saying this is a bold.
Fine. I just wanted to step up for Siobhan there.
Fair enough.
We're all back in Siobhan. But I think it's really good and really impressive decision that they've gone this way, and it makes a really good TV, and it's excellent.
Mm.
Yeah, I of all the shows this week,
yes,
this is the only one I was compelled to watch a second episode of.
Oh my gosh!
So
James, and your ITV,
I know,
brilliant.
Yeah.
You
I went full ITV.
His mind a
you know, they may have shitty press releases, but actually, they put out some good.
I really wish I had ITV. I didn't mean.
Sorry, ITV. Look, you know, when Kay's drunk, she's a mean drunk. She's a mean drunk.
Can I say, you've spent every single podcast, every time we review an ITV show, slagging them off. And I merely just made a couple of comments about the press release, and now you're trying to do my legs.
That's right. 100%. It's great. She's great in it. It was fun. I needed to know what happened. At the end of the first episode, I was like, oh God, I'm going to have to watch the next one now. I couldn't stop. Like, it's fun. They only gave us two, though, so I couldn't watch any further than that. So,
True, and
I frankly would have done had I been given the option.
Same, yeah. So, I'm hoping they'll magically appear the rest of the series.
Oh, that'll be good by the weekend. ITV,
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, Protection, ITV.
So that started yesterday, Sunday, continues today, Monday, the 17th of March, 9 o'clock, ITV 2025, and then continues Sundays and Mondays for the next couple of weeks. But it will also be on the ITVX streaming service as well.
You and ITVX.
Don't confuse.
U5 and ITVX. 5U and ITVX.
They should have a channel called Me, so they could call it You and Me.
Oh, Me and You. Do you remember that classic show as a kid?
You and Me and You.
Well, there's You and
Dave. Sound like a Chuckle Brother.
It's not far from it.
Yeah, I've got my own Chuckle Brothers here.
Thank you, Kay. Right, what else have we missed this week, Boydie?
There's Cozy Crime. Kay, you'll like this.
Yes.
The Marlowe Murder Club is back.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
It's Mira Sayal in that.
No, it stars Jo Martin. Who's very good. She was the Doctor Who superstar a couple of seasons ago. It's Robert Thorogood, adaptations of his books. There is, turning the pages loudly, it's a real week for Cozy Crime because it's also starting its new series on Channel 5, or 5, as it's now known.
You and 5.
Remember? No, just 5. Shut up. Just 5. It's the Madame Blanc Mysteries.
Mm.
And that is the Sally Lindsay show set in Sainte-Victoire, the French town of Sainte-Victoire.
that's a bang on, nailed on authentic accent.
Thanks.
Sally Lindsay.
Hey, I'm complimenting you.
I'm not taking any French lessons.
Sally Lindsay, famously in your favourite Love Rat.
Yes, and I love Sally Lindsay.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
I won't have a word said against her, James. Steve Eyre, she's also in it. And it's really entertaining. That's really interesting. That's back Thursday, the 20th of March, on the channel now, literally called Five. It's Comic Relief on Friday. We should say that, James. You'd be very excited about that.
I do love comedy.
You know
comedy.
How he loves charity.
Yeah.
Charity and comedy.
But there's comedy sketches involving Strictly, Gladiators, Not Going Out, Beyond Paradise, etc. That's Friday, BBC One. 7 o'clock. Oh, The Residence.
The Residence.
As mentioned by me in the What We're Watching section earlier, that begins on Thursday.
Yeah.
It doesn't begin, it all drops on Netflix because it's fucking Netflix. that is the Shondaland show, Who Done It? And we will be reviewing that in Plus.
We will. Plus.
Plus.
Can I give a correction while you're just leaping through?
Yeah.
To say Mira Sayal's cozy crime drama is called Mrs. Sidhu Investigates.
Right.
That's what's
yes.
confusing.
Yes. Mira Sayal, of course, star of The Wheel of Time on Prime Video.
God, I really regret
as Verin Sadai.
The greatest thing she's ever done, obviously.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a little show called The Simpsons is back.
I've heard of it.
Do you know how many? Do you know what season this is?
34.
109.
Close, 36.
Oh, damn it.
It's back on its home of Disney Plus on Monday, and they've got, like, I think they're putting 5 new episodes out to start with. There's a show called Last One Laughing, which looks really good. This is on Prime Video, and it's... What are you laughing at?
Because I like this podcast.
She's the last one laughing.
This is... You'll do well in this show, James.
Would I?
Yeah. Because it's about 10 comedians trying to make each other laugh. And if you laugh, then you get thrown out. So
win that in a heartbeat.
Right. But they've got a good lineup. Bob Mortimer, Daisy May Cooper.
Oh, wow.
Joe Lycett. Judy Love, Rob Beckett, Sarah Pascoe, I'm going through all of them now, Joe Wilkinson, Harriet Kemsley, and Richard Ayoade. Richard Ayoade is doing it. And it's hosted by Jimmy Carr and Roisin Connerty, friend of the pod.
I love
it. Do you remember when Roisin came on with a little
dog? I do. Yeah, that's right.
I was Glory obsessed days. With Game Face.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Mm. Should have been more.
Yeah, I think so.
Channel 4 dropped the ball there. There's a documentary about Surviving Michael Jackson, the sequel, Leaving Neverland 2, on Channel 4 on Tuesday. That will cause, I'm sure, a big stink. And finally... Let me gratuitously mention, that's what Kay's laughing at. Do you know what I'm about to say?
No, it's just you saying big stink. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Finally, on Thursday, on 5, formerly known as Channel 5.
Oh, is this something? Oh, you're starring
a
in
a one-off documentary.
Oh, God.
Called The Amaze Dream House. Are You Missing Out? You know Amaze? Do you know about the Amaze phenomenon, James?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So Amaze is these prize drawers. You'll see that. Only you don't watch TV, do you?
No.
Yeah. Which is great for this podcast.
Well, yeah. Well, for those of you who watch Linear, Amaze is this phenomenon where they end up with these huge prize draws. You enter to spend £10 on it, and then you could win like a massive dream house in Margate or whatever, or £250,000 or a million. It's a whole thing. It's a whole phenomenon, pop culture phenomenon, and I am a talking head in it.
Oh, yeah.
And not only am I a talking head in it, for some reason, Channel 5, I'm not kidding you.
5?
Put the picture of me... as a talking head, looking like a fucking idiot
on the press release,
as the default picture for people to put in their magazines,
oh my God,
and newspapers.
Yes.
This is a picture
that
of me looking like an absolute monster.
Incredible.
Yeah. Oh,
we need that
excited.
for the pilot social feed. You need to send it to me.
Yeah, 100%. I will.
How
it's ridiculous. Yeah. I might have. I'll show you a picture.
Well, that's clearly our pick of the week. So
thrilling.
What's your pick of the week, Kay?
100% protection.
Yeah,
I mean, that's protection. Good advice generally, I think.
Yeah.
Boydie.
I'm just showing you. There you go, Jeff. That's all the power.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. Oh, you look so happy. Look at your little face.
Oh, look at you.
It's because you're laughing. So I've got squinty eyes.
We don't often see
you
that
look,
on the podcast.
You look full of joy.
Yeah. It's like you never see it because obviously no one I'm responding to James.
Normally you're scowling or yelling expletives about the Wheel of Time.
It's literally the lead image on the Paramount.
Wonderful.
/5.
Give the audience what they want.
That's right. Give the audience what they want. Pick of the week, Boydie.
Protection.
Also, my pick of the week.
Woo-hoo!
A triple bill.
Go
triple
ITV.
Bill. Triple something. I don't know. We all for protection.
It's a yes from all of us.
Yes. A yes from all of us for ITV. I think that's it. We are done with this week's podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating. Or, you know, anywhere else you want to leave us a 5-star rating is fine as well. And please do follow us on the socials at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer, and at Pilot TV Pod. Maybe sign up to the subreddit as well while you're at it. You know, do everything.
Want to give a shout out to Duncan Harrower, who did exactly what you said and left us a glowing review on our podcast. And I want to say thank you. So thank you, Duncan, for listening and for taking the time to do that.
Yes, we appreciate it. On next week's show, what are we going to be covering? I mean, look, Bosch Legacy
returns for its final final season next week.
Obviously,
we're going to cover that. What else? We've got The Studio, Boydie mentioned. That's coming to Apple TV Plus. We're definitely going to cover that. Mobland, the Guy Ritchie show, comes to Paramount Plus. I suspect that's going to be embargo, but we will see. Side Quest, which is the Mythic Quest spin-off show, that comes to Apple TV Plus as well. And also Wild Cards is on Paramount Plus. So yeah, lots of things to choose from.
There's a big BBC drama called The City Is Ours. City Is Ours, which I'm sure we'll be doing as well. What was the thing you said in the middle of that? I think one of the things you said, I think, don't think is on. But anyway.
One of those is not on. Well, which one? Tell me, Boydie, which one is not on? Because, you know, clearly you view the calendar regularly.
You know? Well done, you walked into that trap.
Yeah, I totally walked into that trap.
What have you incorrectly placed on the calendar?
Oh, no, I think you must have incorrectly placed
I mean, probably.
You put stuff on the calendar as well.
I do, that's true. Yeah, I may have put something in. So one of those shows may in fact not be on
Mobland.
Next week.
Mobland.
I think it's on Sunday. Yeah, it's on the Sunday. It's at the very end of the week.
I tell a lie.
You besmirched my good name.
Guy Ritchie will come to our rescue.
That's right.
You guys.
He will. You're not a gentleman. Anyway, that's it. We're done. We're finished. I think we can all agree now we will, as a group, head off to watch Wheel of Time together.
Sigh.
Group watch?
No.
Be fun.
No. I'm going to off to drink some more Moe.
Yeah, that's it.
Group snooze.
Kay's off to the bar. Yeah. Love a few back.
Yeah, ciao for now.
Maybe the way to watch it is with a few more glasses of
what?
Champagne.
That could work. Do you know, let's try this for next week. I want you to get absolutely shit-faced and then binge watch The Wheel of Time.
Mm. What do I get out of it?
The experience of watching The Wheel of Time.
Yeah, I think I'm good. I'll just have the one glass of Moe, thanks.
Fair enough.
On James's tab.
By the tout.